Okay, our next session this afternoon is reviewing and discussion of the new AMD tuning requirements. Our presenter is Jeremy Ruck. Jeremy is a principal engineer with Jeremy Ruck and Associates Incorporated of Canton, Illinois. He's been working in the field of broadcasting for 28 years now, and for nearly all of that time has concentrated on transmission plant consulting. Jeremy is a graduate of Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois, with a degree in the Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering, is a registered professional engineer in the state of Illinois, and is a full member of the Association of Federal Communication Consulting Engineers. Excuse me. Jeremy.
Well, you did all right. You did all right for an Illinois boy. Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's good to be back again. I hope everybody's out of your food coma this afternoon, so I don't know about the logic of putting me on right after lunch. In the interest of disclosure, I was in Indiana last week and spoke at their conference, and you guys know I always start out with a little bit of humor. Well, it fell flat, so I don't know if it was the tie, because I had the same tie on today, the relativity tie, or if I didn't carry it off. So if you guys don't laugh, we won't have the humor next year. So anyway, just kind of a shameless plug here just to begin with. How many of you guys have this book right here? Anybody seen this? Basic Neck? Okay. This is a great book. So if some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today, if you want to get a little bit better read on it, this is really, really a good book. There's actually a CD in it, which allows you to work through some of the examples. And, of course, you're supporting SBE if you buy a copy. They didn't pay me to do that. Okay, just to start with real quick, you know, there's a lot of conflict between Mac and Windows users, and a lot of times there's question as to whether there's compatibility between them. So in reality, just to point out what's going on, really, Mac does in fact support Windows. Okay, how many guys are TV here today? Oh, got a whole bunch. All right. Any of you guys ever had to run that slide? All right, well, I left a little bit late this morning, so I decided to take a shortcut. Yeah. Well, that was probably some poor judgment, but I'm not sure that it was as poor as this judgment. And, of course, now that we're getting into fall, you know, those of us down in Illinois, and I got to give Greg a plug about that because he was getting kidded by Chuck about being an Illinois boy. But we do things engineering a little bit different downstate. And so this is how we clean our sidewalks off. So, and last but not least. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the new rules for detuning requirements for offending radiators near AM structures. How many of you guys have gotten letters over the past few years, those of you that have AMs? Yeah. Saying, hey, we're going to build this. And what's happened is the rules were kind of nebulous before. There's actually some new codification and some new writing of it that makes things a little bit, well, actually a lot more standardized throughout the industry. So we'll take a look at that. They became effective in February. So this is kind of a good presentation. When Linda called me and said, hey, what do you want to talk about? I said, eh, let's talk about something like this. So it's good that we're hitting this. If any of you went to NAB, there was some discussion. Ben Dawson actually had a paper during one of the sessions where he talked about this as well. They did a revision of the previous procedures, obviously. That kind of goes without saying. This was all part of the AMDA verification procedures. And what that is, that's the docket that allowed us to do the moment method proofs. Remember, prior to that, we did everything by field strength measurements. And now we've been able to do stuff with computer modeling. And the new rules take this into account. Anybody notice anything about that docket number there? 93, okay? And it's not only 93, it's MM, which means mass media. So you can tell this is really, really old. This thing's been hanging around for quite a while. Original proceeding actually began in 1991. So it was on the third go-around, third iteration, when we finally got around to dealing with the detuning requirements. The history on this, well, the concern of re-rating structures actually goes back about 50 years. Commission realized that this was a problem, especially with the proliferation of two-way radios, things like that. We went from the really big handy-talkies and, you know, not a very ubiquitous amount of communication to what we've got now with cellular, show my age by saying that. But so we've got a lot more structures out there. The original idea, and a lot of this ties in kind of with the last guy on concept. If you come on and mess with somebody else that's already been there, you're the guy that's at fault. And the concept of this is actually even older. This goes back even into the 40s. Now, if you remember some of the old 301 forms, there was always a question on there about, is there anybody else on the site? And you had to specifically state how you were going to address any kind of interference that you caused with it. With the streamlining, some of that's gone away, but we still kind of kept that last on has the responsibility. The previous ones were pretty inconsistent. There were several different sections of the rules that were kind of scattered around. Who it applied to, that was not overly clear. And whether certain cases were necessarily applicable, people weren't really sure. So this new procedure has taken care of this. Okay, the fundamentals are it's now applicable to all services. So if you're an AM building an AM, you know, near an AM, you have to take care of it. If you're an FM, TV, two-way, BAS, whatever the case may be. There are three main parts to the new rules. The first one is a threshold test. Is the study actually required? And we'll go through what is the definition of when it's required and when it's not. There's a methodology described on how to make the study. And then we've actually got specific notification requirements. There are actually notification procedures that have to be made. Rules are spelled out in this section, 1.30,000 to 3004. If you go to section 1, go all the way to the bottom, it's the last group of rules that's in there. So it's pretty easy to find. Okay, a lot of verbiage here, but this is the initial one. I want to just walk through this and highlight a couple of points. So this rule part protects, and sorry for reading to you, but we'll go through it, protects operations of AM broadcast stations from nearby tower construction that may distort the AM antenna patterns. All parties holding or applying for commission authorizations that propose to construct or make a significant modification to an antenna tower or support structure in the immediate vicinity of an AM antenna or propose to install an antenna on an AM tower are responsible for completing the analysis and notice process described in this subpart and for taking any measures necessary to correct disturbances of the AM radiation pattern if such disturbances occur. So once again, who does this apply? AMs, FMs, TV, BAS, two-way, and yeah, amateur radio. Okay. So many of you guys are building, if you're a ham like me and you live next to an AM station, you need to take this into account, every authorization. Now, there is some question if you've got a receive site. Remember, receive sites are not authorized. They're just kind of a receive location. So if you build a tower, you may, and you're within this threshold distance, you may want to take a look at it, but you may not get caught, okay? And the stations do have an out for that, and we'll talk about that. Okay, a threshold test is based on a structure distance. It's also based on a structure height. That kind of makes sense, that if something's short or it's a far distance away, it may not necessarily affect it. It also is based on whether you're doing a modification or a construction. So the distance, the previous requirements were just a fixed distance. And what they dealt with was the operation mode. If you were non-directional, this distance. If you're directional, this distance. Okay. What they did is change things to sort of a frequency-dependent type of thing where the wavelengths, the height of the structure, and the distance actually factors in. The dependency on the operation mode still remains, though. Okay. If we've got a directional pattern with very tight nulls, chances are we're going to affect it differently than we're going to affect a non-directional guy. And the distance, of course, is to the AM antenna location. What's the AM antenna location for a directional? Center of the array. Very good. Very good. Okay. For non-directional, we're going to be looking at locations within one wavelength, 360 degrees. The height has to be 60 degrees or greater. That, of course, is a sixth of a wavelength. Okay. The directional threshold, which is tighter, is the lesser of 10 wavelengths or 3 kilometers. And there we're looking at 36 degrees or a tenth of a wavelength. Okay, those of you guys that are AM gurus, remember, usually when we get down around a tenth of a wavelength, we're going to find that things become very, very inefficient. And so that's the logic behind the 36 degrees. Okay, wavelength, just a real quick primer on this. Recall that there's the inverse relationship between wavelength and frequency. Go up in one, we go down in the other. Velocity of light, of course, is the product. And we can solve for the wavelength by dividing the velocity of light by frequency. There's our really nice equation. Okay, so here's some, just to give you an idea where some of the distances fall. If you're at the bottom end of the band, a wavelength at 540 is going to be 555 meters, 1,822 feet, a little over 3/10 of a mile. If you're mid-band, you're looking at 300 meters, 0.19 miles, about 1,000 feet. Go to the top end of the band, that shortens down considerably to about 1/10 of a mile. And if we go at the top of the expanded band, we're just a little bit shorter as well. Okay, electrical degrees, everybody familiar with this, I hope. We see this on the AM authorizations. It's really a convenient way of expressing height, so we don't have to say it's X number of meters. We can just use degrees. You got to work back to get the height in it, but obviously the physical height in feet or meters is going to be dependent on frequency and what fraction of a wavelength are you at. 3 degrees, of course, is a wavelength. 60 is 1/6, and 36 is 1/10, as I already mentioned. Okay, so 60 degrees at 540, we're looking at 304 feet. So that would be kind of the height threshold on somebody that would be affecting a non-directional. At 540, 36 is 182 feet, obviously a lot shorter. At 1,000, we're looking at 164. 98 for 36.
You're talking about the height of the structure being put up for a...
Yes, that's correct. The question was, and by the way, if you guys have any questions, you know, don't ever hesitate to interrupt. Yes, we're talking about this is the height of the offending structure that would be impacting the particular AM station under consideration. 60 degrees, they're 103 feet, and 62 feet. So you can see that as we get higher into band, obviously, an offending structure doesn't have to be really tall at all to cause us lots of problems, especially if it's close in. Okay, so here's our threshold, basically. If you're on 540, the distance is going to be 0.34 miles, 0.19 miles, 0.12 at 1,600. Okay, for directional, this is a little more complex. As I mentioned, it's the lesser of two, whether we're talking 3 kilometers, three or 10 wavelengths. So 3 kilometers, about 1.86 miles. This is interesting here. Your equivalency point, where we find these are equal, is going to be at 1,000. Okay, so if you're below 1,000, the important criteria is going to be the 3 kilometer distance. Whereas if we go on the other side of 1,000, we're going to use 10 wavelengths. Okay. Okay, calculating distance from the AM. Remember, this is for a non-directional. We're based on the actual tower location. For a DA, we're talking about the center of the array. Now, if you've got a six-tower parallelogram on 540, that's going to take up a lot of real estate. So there's going to be a pretty significant difference between the center of the array and any particular given element in the array. The coordinates, remember this. This is an interesting little inconsistency that our lovely government uses, is the coordinates for the broadcast authorizations are in NAD 27, which is North American Datum of 1927. Two-way stuff, antenna structure registrations are in NAD 83. North American Datum of 1983. Okay, this part of the country, we're pretty lucky. They're pretty close. It's about 0.5 second difference. Okay, as you get out to the Dakotas and get west, you can see about a 3 to 4 second difference between the longitude values. So we're talking about 36 feet here in Madison. And that's actually here in Madison. I did check it just to make sure. I used the candelabra as the reference for that. Okay, so we want to make sure our coordinates are in the same datum. There are ways to transform between that. There's software utilities you can do. There's one called CorpsCon, C-O-R-P-S-C-O-N, that the military puts out. There are also some online correction utilities that can be used. It's also good to verify coordinates. How many of you guys have looked at your ASRs and compared them against your licenses? Yeah, they differ a little bit? Yeah. Some of that came from when the registrations were put in. People just grabbed the numbers and threw them in. Google Earth is actually pretty close. So if you want to use a reference point, grab Google Earth. Of course, check for the shadow, because depending on where they were and where the sun is, you can skew your location. The FCC does have a web utility to give you the distance between them. I didn't put the URL up here because it's, you know, typical government URL like this. If you just Google FCC distance and coordinates, it'll give you that. And it'll give you actually the azimuth and the distance between any two points. This is important to remember. You might think that when you go through that, there are two actual distances you can select. You can select a great circle, which says AM, or you can use the FCC method. The great circle saying AM might seem to be the right one, but remember, that is a computation that's valid over very, very long distances. Since we're talking about very short distances here, a few miles or less, the Commission's flat Earth model is the one you want to use, which will indicate like FM according to Section 73 something or other. Okay, construction is, and mods, we kind of classify them as major or minor. Well, any new tower construction is going to automatically, by default, be construed as a major modification. Okay, any tower height alteration by 5 degrees or more at the AM frequency, that is also considered minor. And that's a delta change. That's a plus or a minus. Okay, it doesn't matter which direction you're going. If you make an alteration by more than 5 degrees, you got to look into it. Any tower that's detuned, that qualifies as a construction being a major modification. And that's including whether you're changing an antenna, changing the transmission line. If the tower's detuned, it's a major change. Base insulated towers. Well, base insulated towers are going to typically be an AM. All right. This applies, whether, as I mentioned, whether we're talking antennas or transmission lines. I guess I should have put line in there, shouldn't I? Okay, additional considerations. The rules also talk about putting stuff on top of buildings, and we never really considered that before. Now, you don't have to consider the entire building. You only have to consider the tower on top of the building. So if we hit that 36 degree and we're within that lesser of 10 wavelengths or 3 kilometers, then it counts. If it's short, but the whole building itself exceeds the standard, well, you can throw out the building. Okay, so it's only the antenna structure itself that counts. So we ignore the building. Outside this criteria, outside the major criteria, it's assumed that there's going to be no impact on the AM station. However, there could still be an impact. Okay. And the commission gives us an out for that. We'll talk about that in the notification. All right, here's an example right here, and intuitively, let's see what you guys think. A new tower 300 feet in height is proposed to be located 1,700 feet from a 600 kilowatts non-directional. Impact, yes or no? What do you guys think? Yes, okay. Here's the math. All right, so what we see is our tower height is 65.9 degrees. So that qualifies as having an impact. But look here, wavelength 1,639 feet, and we're 1,700 out. Okay, so this one actually does not meet the criteria of requiring the notification of the study. Now, in reality, because I was playing with the models earlier, and there actually is a very, very slight impact on this, but it's insignificant. Okay, example two. Now, if you guys think 50% chance, what do you think on this one? Proposed monopole, 164 feet to be constructed, 2,459 feet. I made the metric numbers work out. That's why the numbers look weird there. From a four-tower inline directional array that operates on 1,000, proposed monopole will be located 180 degrees true from the array. Does this one have an impact? Yeah. Yeah, this one actually does. Okay, here's the math. So we can see that the tower height is 60 degrees, so it exceeds that 36-degree criteria. Okay, we're at 2.5 wavelengths away. 0.75 kilometers, yeah, this definitely requires a study. Definitely. Okay, so what we're going to do is doing the study, and here's actually the pattern. I gave you guys the parameters if you want to see them. Thanks to Doug for his great software for to do the nice exhibit here. So just kind of a nice 90-degree spaced array here, 90 degrees on the heights. So kind of a run-of-the-mill four tower, but fairly tight on the back side. Okay, so I use both the MiniNeck Broadcast Pro and ACS model, which is Chris Alexander maintains the ACS model. It's a pretty good program, works real well. Both of those are also ones that the commission uses. So if you use either one of those, and the MiniNeck Broadcast Pro is actually sort of out of print, so you got to find an older version of it. But if you do use those two guys, you'll be pretty rest assured you're going to agree with what the commission comes up with. Okay, so here's our pattern by itself, and here's how it looks with our fending radiator. Notice right there we got a little bit of distortion, don't we? Look down here, too. As it turns out, though, these guys are actually not the problems. The problems are actually right there in the nulls. Okay. And since the offending structure was located due south of the array, it's out in the major lobe, so it's going to be lit up pretty well by the aim station. Okay, PAX directional pattern. Now here's the catch, is that whatever impact you have, if it does not exceed 2 dB, then they don't have to do anything about detuning it. Okay. In this particular case, in the nulls, we saw a swing modeled of almost 4 dB. Okay, so there's obviously a fairly significant impact to it. Okay, and here is just a chart. And what I did was, rather than give you guys all the numbers, and of course the pattern's symmetrical, and since I put the radiator on the tower line, the impact is going to be symmetrical about it. But you can see, and I did basically where we started, about 1 dB change. Right here at 30 degrees, we've got 3.74. In this particular case, it reduced the field strength radiated off the AM instead of increasing it. All right, so how do we get rid of this? Well, obviously, we're going to look at doing some detuning. And the model predicted we should be looking at a reactance to ground of plus J678. Now, when I did this, when I put this together, I actually had the sign backwards and realized that about 80 miles out of Peoria this morning that, oh, crap, I made a mistake in the presentation, so I scurried it and fixed it. So we're requiring about 107 microhenries, pretty good-sized coil. Okay. Now, obviously, if we skirt it, as you guys all know, the skirts tend to have a fairly high reactance value, so that's going to change what components we're going to use in it. Okay, so then once again, here is our pattern without any kind of an impact, just naked by itself. And then here's the model once I detune the other structure. Looks pretty close. Yeah. In reality, you can see here now what we've done is we've taken those maxes that were close to 4 dB, and we've got them down under 1 dB. So the detuning definitely works and reduces the impact on the structure. Okay, now mounting antennas on towers. Non-directional towers require an indirect method. Everybody remember what indirect method is? Yeah, ignore the base current meter. Use voltage and current on your final amplifier stage with the efficiency. Once you get done with the construction, you got to perform a base impedance measurement. The commission does not give you any direction on how to do that. You just got to do it accurately. You could do it with a GR bridge, a cold bridge, and a driver. Do it with an OIB. You could even do it with like the little array solutions or even a full-blown network analyzer. If the variance exceeds 2% of what's on the authorization, then a BZ app is required. BZ is short form for direct measurement. If you look at a direct measurement apps, I'll have a BZ file number prefix. That's also, by the way, a free application because it doesn't really change the license. It just modifies it slightly, so there's no filing fee on a direct measurement app. It is one of the few remaining apps that actually does have to be submitted on paper, however. There's no electronic filing for it. If it's a DA that was authorized by field strength measurements, in other words, a traditional proof, then you're going to have to do a partial proof both before and after construction. Partial proof, we're down to 4 radials now. You used to have to do all the radials, and you're looking at like 8 to 10 points between 3 and 16 kilometers. The monitor point radials do have to be measured, so if you only got 3 monitor points, just pick another radial. Okay, if it's an array that is authorized by the moment method, how many guys have arrays? Anybody got theirs changed over? I know some of the journal guys have, and yeah, okay. So what you do is if you're mounted on one of the elements in the array, we're going to measure the base impedance of the tower on which the antenna is mounted. Then that's going to be compared against the model. This record of the impedance measurement then is to be maintained with the station's public file so it can be referenced. You don't have to go out and do the reference field strength measurements and all that as long as it does not change more than 2 ohms and 4%. Okay. If the addition of the antenna or the removal changes by more than that, then what you've got to do is redo the model and recalibrate and make sure you can get it back in. Now, there may be certain instances where that may change the structure of the tower to where the moment method may not be applicable anymore, so that's something to keep an eye on. But you can't ignore the other towers, okay? Only the one tower in which the antenna is mounted. Okay, the notification process. I think everybody's pretty good on taking care of this stuff, or at least they should be. It requires it at least 30 days prior. And the 30 days, you guys all get frequency coordination stuff. The 30 days is supposed to start from when you receive the actual notification, okay? And you can do it by registered mail or FedEx or whatever. So if stuff is sent by postal service, usually give it about 5 or 6 days just to make sure, because sometimes they get slow. We use the CDBS information for the contact. The commission also in the rules talks about using the successor database. Those of you guys who are in TV know that there's a new system out now for filing TV applications. So they're eventually going to transfer all of the radio stuff over to the new system as well. So that's why that talks about a successor. The notification can be oral or written, right? It does not have to be specifically written out. But if you do it oral, as always, you got to maintain documentation if you're the proponent. There is an expedited procedure that is possible. And you guys ever get those coordination requests where it's put on there, hey, this is an expedited request? Maybe ever seen that? Yeah. Same thing applies here, but if you do the expedited process, the proponent is required to get a response from you. If you do it on a 30-day thing, you don't have to necessarily respond to them. So that's one thing that some of the guys that do a lot of the frequency coordination ignore, is that if you're doing the expedited processing, they're required to get a response. Then there's a 5-day thing for emergencies, and that's 5 days after. But the prong on this is that if there is a problem, they get to put it up, but they got to work with you guys to get it solved downstream. Okay. All right, some final considerations. Just as a reminder, structures outside can impact. Even though it does not meet the commission's criteria for a major modification or the notification, there can still be an impact. If you discover something that looks problematic, you got 2 years to notify the commission. Okay. And you can use either the moment method or field strength measurements to show that this guy has done some distortion to you. How many guys religiously take their monitor points? Got a few. Okay. Yeah. If you're not doing those, keep an eye on them. I would also recommend go out and check your major lobe once in a while. Get you out of the office for a couple days. Get away from the GM and get to go play with the field strength meter. But that way you get a baseline as to what's going on so you know if anybody pops up. You can show compliance by using field strength measurements once again. The rules talk about using monitor points. That's good. You may also want to get a couple of additional points because monitor points sometimes go south, as we all know. Last but not least, watch the horizon. Okay, keep an eye out to see who's building stuff near you. Drive around within that radius and make sure nobody's popping something up because, you know, mailing addresses change, postal service loses stuff, you may miss something that's coming through. So I guess I did run a little short, so Chuck, you're going to have a little more time for yours. So any questions? What you got, Don?
I know that the commission will not let us use skirted towers for MOM. Will they let you model a skirt for re-radiation purposes?
Good point. The way the rules talk about is it says to you, it gives the rule section a 151C, where it talks about how to do the modeling. But it says in lieu of that, you can also model it as a series of thin wires. So when I did these models, I just assumed a thin wire with the effective radiation radius distance. These are like, you know, 0.3 meters and 20 segments.
For the utility, can you
model? Yeah.
So if you find a tower that's outside of the criteria and it's re-radiating from your directional and you go to the FCC, would they then go back to the owner of the tower and call for a study?
Well, the idea is that you give the study to the commission to say, hey, we went out and found that these guys are doing it. That's why they give you the 2 years. They realize everybody's busy. It may take a little bit of time to find it. But the rules do talk about that the commission will specifically come in and order these guys to effectively detune the structure. And remember, the detuning thing is not just a one-shot deal. There's also a maintenance requirement component to it as well, that if they're somebody detunes something and they're required to detune it, they're also required for the ongoing maintenance of that detuning apparatus as well. Okay, anybody else?
You mentioned something earlier about antennas being mounted on buildings that under the new rules for purposes of the discussion that the building could be ignored. Back in the day, the commission would not allow a building-mounted AM and radiator if the building was in the area of a quarter wavelength in height of the frequency of the station.
Right.
That's been thrown aside now?
Well, no, because remember, what this is, the idea behind something being on a building is the assumption is that that's not necessarily an AM radiator. It's probably a two-way guy or an FM tower or something like that. So I think that was the idea behind the rules, that it's geared more towards, you know, a two-way or an FM, a non-AM radiator type of situation.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, anybody else? All right, cool. Thanks, guys. I really, really appreciate it. It's good to see everybody. Hope everybody has a great fall, had a great summer, too.